Caution, learning in progress.
Welcome back to another episode of Smarter Every Season, the podcast brought to you by Precision Planning's product support. I'm your host, Drew Stout, and I'm joined alongside my co-host, Tyler Hubert. Tyler, how we doing?
Who are you?
I'm Drew Stout, a member of product support. For those of you who don't know, I was in this past round of dealer technical training. I was a part of the Liquid group. I did some of the EM HD session with Ori, and I also had my own stand during the breakout sessions.
Nice. Yeah, I remember you, kind of a baby-faced guy.
Yep, that was probably me.
Drew, I'm doing good, and you're doing good, buddy.
Keep it up. Yeah, so for those of you who listen to the podcast, you know, we talk about a lot of different topics on the show here. Today we want to focus on product resources, and not just product resources, but resources that we're using here in product support. I'm joined alongside a couple of more product support members here, Alan Huber and Matt Locklear. Guys, go ahead and introduce yourselves.
Yeah, so my name is Matt Locklear, product lead for granular rate control. I also help with Dylan on anything cedars and clarity related. Been here about a year and a few months, and just enjoying myself and learning every day.
And I'm Alan Huber. I'm also on our product support team. One of the product leads within software, so as software has become more than just planters, that team has grown, so you'll probably hear product lead for software from multiple different people because we probably got at least four or five of us now that have some sort of unique role, whether it's Panorama, sprayers, seeders, like Matt just mentioned, things like that. So I've also been doing a lot because of that with Symphony. So you've probably potentially run into me recently if you're a newer dealer. We did Symphony training around the nation here. And so if you were in Ohio or Canada or any of the southern locations, that was kind of the loop that I did. We had another handful of guys that kind of took that northwestern loop and went up into the Dakotas, and I forget how far west we went.
Alan, I think this is a good opportunity. I don't know that you and I have ever done a podcast episode together. Just to hopefully reiterate to everybody that you are Alan Huber. There is no T at the end of your name.
Yeah, I had trouble with spelling as a kid, so it made it a lot easier.
To leave one letter off. I am Tyler Hubert. There's a T at the end of my name. We're similarly heighted men. You are probably a good 50 pounds lighter. Kind of scruffy in the face, but much more handsome. I'm kind of a short, round fella. So if that helps anybody place us, I think is a really good opportunity. You, me, and Jared Moore. I feel like we got woven into... we got confused for each other quite a bit. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to think... what are some of the other podcast episodes I've been in? I'm sure we've done others, whether it was software or VFI.
We did a training one together, actually, now that you say that. Been a couple years ago. Yeah. But I think we should take any opportunity we can to set the record straight.
And also make sure that people know that we're related.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I didn't realize that it was you that had spelling issues. I always thought this went back to when our family split, coming over from France.
On the Mayflower?
It was the T at the end. Yeah. It was the T at the end that I think split our families. We couldn't come to an agreement. And so the Hubers went one way and the Huberts went the other way. Is this what you were looking for today, Drew?
No, this is great. Anytime we can do a little ancestry within product support, that's always good.
23 and me.
We are not sponsored by them. Anywho.
But if you're listening and would like to,
yeah,
please contact Drew Stout.
Anywho, well, yeah, thank you, Alan. Thank you, Matt, for taking your time to be on the show here. I guess the opening question I kind of want to start off with is, like I said, this episode we're going to be focusing on resources that us as product support members use. So I'll kind of ask Alan and Matt, you guys, this question. We obviously take a variety of calls throughout the season, and especially during the heavy support season in the spring. How do you guys find yourself navigating through all those different calls and kind of just working through them to get the information you need to get guys back up and running?
Yeah, I know that as you kind of presented this topic and asked if Matt and I wanted to come down and chat about it, one of the conversations Matt and I had kind of just just kind of spitballing as we were kind of getting ready down here.
We do sit right across from each other. So
yeah, we do. We do. Our desks are kind of like a half wall there. So as long as I just peek around my monitor,
yeah,
we have easy face-to-face conversations. And that was part of the thing is you know, we kind of were high level. You know, we've got a lot of resources. In fact, I know you're probably going to ask questions that kind of get into more of the resources and what tools we actually use. And a lot of those tools are the tools that our dealers are using too. But one of the huge legs up that I think that Matt and I get, especially Monday through Friday from 7 to 5, 8 to 5, kind of, you know, we kind of stagger ourselves coming in early in the morning. We've got 20 plus other individuals that are readily available in the same room, in the same building, right? You know, the product support team, especially during the spring, we're not chained to our desks. That's totally not the right thing to say. But when it's planting season, you know, we're around. That's not when we're going out and doing training for Symphony in Ohio or Canada. It's not when we're running up to Alberta and doing a clarity stand with Dustin and his dealers. You know, those things happen in the wintertime. Those things happen in other seasons that are not all hands on deck. So that's one of the things I think that we kind of talked about is each other, brainstorming, using our brains. I think, Matt, you said that exact thing was like focusing on the issue at hand, trying not to skip over some of those.
I think the reason that we want to tackle this topic now is, you know, we're weeks away from planting season kind of breaking loose. And the goal here was, for us as a team, like you said, Alan, the cool thing is we're all hands on deck, right, as we get into the springtime. And wanting to highlight the tools that we do use to make ourselves successful. You are, well, I would put you into the veteran status, right? This is coming up, what? I'm going to say it's spring 9 or 10, and we don't have to get into what that is exactly, but... For you, what are the most commonly used tools? What are the things that even as you approach season, I'll just leave it open and say 8, 9, or 10. What is it for you that it's like, yeah, but I still consult this every day?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Actually, I kind of like that badge. This would be spring 11 for me. So 2014 was my first spring. That was the first spring of Redrive Delta Force. So any of our dealers that were a part of that sales season the fall before I showed up, thank you for that, because that was a pretty big first-year product. We sold a ton, and I remember it being extremely busy. But our team was a lot smaller, too, back then. But the operator's guides were – I remember walking in on my first day that previous winter, and Andy Fike actually just set down a row flow operator's guide. And he's like, read through this, memorize it. You're going to need it this spring. That exists today. So, you know, Matt talked about Clarity. Clarity is a newer product for a lot of our team. You know, we don't have a ton of air seeders and strip till rigs here in Central Illinois. And so that operator's guide that you and Dylan have trained so heavily on, that's a go-to resource for me. And that applies across the board for our control products. You know, I kind of broadly feel like I have a decent understanding of how our products work, but I don't have every detailed setting, voltage range. That dealer service manual, that thing is downloaded top of my most used documents on my phone, because when I'm not in the office, I'm definitely going to that. I don't have hardware at home.
Do you find yourself using the dealer service manual even if it's a troubleshooting scenario you think you're familiar with?
Yeah, unless it's like straightforward V-drive motors not working, no lights on it, it looks like a mouse chewed on this, I usually probably am. Most of that's because we so quickly can jump to conclusions, especially if I just got off a phone call that sounded exactly like this, but was actually a different issue. And there's a lot of ways that you can make a single V-drive fail. Whether it's jammed, a mouse nest in it, it's old, you know, it's from 2014 and it finally has given up the ghost. And so that was one of the big pushes for that dealer service guide way back when, was everybody has their own thought process, even within our own team where we all sit together and we train together, and there's still different angles that each of us have strengths and weaknesses in. So the dealer service manual helps make sure that I don't skip over the easy stuff. also helps make sure that we ask the right questions. There's a lot of questions that you call in and say, hey, clarity's not working. That's a really vague statement. Like, what does not working mean? First of all, is it blockage only? Do you have motors involved? Is the screen turning on? You know, that kind of thing.
Matt, you will be going into your second season here with us.
That's correct.
Thinking about your time last year as a new product support member, what do you feel were the resources that you went back to most often or found most helpful?
Yeah, so I learned this pretty early on, and I still repeat this habit every time I come in. If I'm on phones for that day, first few things that I pull up on my computer, I open up three or four tabs. I'm pulling up the order guide, the product resources tab, the dealer service manual, and the online store. And I'm using all of those in conjunction to look at parts, to break down kits. For example, you go in the online store, you pull up a specific part number, and you get to see all of the parts that are used in that. Or if it's a kit, you know, what all comes in that. Like Alan was saying, the dealer service manual. So when I first started, and even now, one of the things that I had trouble with was I'd get a call. It would seem like a really complex issue happening, and I would almost just forget everything I'd ever learned and then immediately start like, it's been too long on the phone. Like, I need to go ask somebody, when in reality, the answer is right there in front of me in one of those documents I just listed, or one of those resources, particularly like Alan was saying, the dealer service manual, and product resources in general, with all of the different diagrams, install manuals, operation manuals, parts list, parts breakdowns. So those are really the fundamental things that I use every single day. And yes, I use my teammates. That's a big advantage for me being new, is relying on the veterans that have been here for 11 seasons. But at the end of the day, those guys have laid the foundation with great documentation ranging all of our products, and we're still continuing to update and build on all of that. So I would say those are the main things that I'm using.
Order guide, store, product resources. Product resources open just for wherever you've got to go.
Yeah,
right. Like, whatever question comes up, I think I've come across that before in the Apply HD install.
So me personally, anytime somebody calls in, as soon as they start to say like what product they're working on or having a problem with, let's say they call and say, "Hey, I just updated my Gen 3 to XYZ software." The first thing I'm doing is, as they're telling me this, I'm going to the product resources. I'm pulling up the 2020 Gen 3 resource page, and I'm kind of just waiting. And then they're going to go, "Okay, I found this setting. What does it do?" Well, I immediately know I'm going to the Gen 3 operator's manual. I'm going to control F, and if I don't know the answer, I'm going to type that in and find it, because I know it's in there. These documents are thorough. There's not 100% of everything listed on paper everywhere, but like, pretty close. It's pretty thorough. So that's kind of how my brain works. And I've trained myself to do that, to kind of take a deep breath, not overthink things, and basically just start from the basics. At least take a look at the resources first, before I just assume that what I'm dealing with is unique, because at the end of the day, all of these systems, you know, kind of fundamentally operate the same way.
I would echo too. Like, those are, like you said, I'm pulling up several tabs. That's why I got two monitors. I want the operator's guide. I want the dealer service manual. I want cloud resources. And to add to like the thoroughness of documents, we find stuff all the time that's not in a document. You know what? No one's really asked us that. A prime example is yesterday. Ori reached out to myself and to Emil, and he was like, "Hey, I got a guy who's drawing field boundaries. He has an RTK globe, but on the 2020 in the GPS page, it's showing GPS quality enhanced. It's not saying RTK. What does that mean?" And I was like, "Oh, okay, this is a definition." Hopped in the ops guide, typed in GPS quality. Gen 2, Gen 3, and our newest 24.1 operator's guide, we got three ops guides. None of them go any further than just saying that fixed quality, GPS fixed quality, is on the GPS page. Doesn't mean it's not important, but it means apparently no one's asked that question enough times that it's ever come up that it doesn't exist in the document. You know, we've had the Gen 1 out since 2008, I believe. Well, that's when we first started intercepting GPS signals and reading NEMA strings. So It has resulted in 24 hours of learning, talking to our software team, and that definition is now being added to all three of those documents because we've got it now. We've done some research. It's an industry standard. This is not Precision Planting's made up fixed quality. It's from the GLONASS factory or whatever they're, whoever's got that base governmental code that was started way back when. So that's just a great example of continuing to add to the knowledge that we do come across and now share that, right? You know,
and I would say too, the order guide is another huge asset. It has a ton, not just pictures and part numbers and, you know, the name of harnesses or modules. It has a ton of information listed under all of the sections. So any nuances with installing a product or how something, you know, what's required to make something work. There are a lot of notes on the order guide that I use constantly to address, you know, diagnostic problems or just standard, you know, quoting problems or anything that somebody comes across that, you know, might not necessarily trigger me to go right into the install manual. A lot of times I'll pull up the order guide, go to the product and just see, hey, what notes are in there? Because we do update that constantly as well.
And I think on that, Matt, that's a really good note to kind of point out because just for an example, you can see all the flow ranges of operating ranges for flow senses and HDs. Yes, that info can be found under those resources. And probably I think it's the ops guide. It would tell you that. But yeah, those keynotes that the order guide is sharing with us, a lot of if-then statements. If you're trying to do this, then here's how we can make that work sort of thing. So,
and on the install doc side of things, those are huge for me. We get a lot of opportunities to build stuff, show stands, all of our planters that we use at PTI. And we, as a product support team, get a lot of hands-on opportunities. You know, John Deere has a whole separate fleet down in Brazil and Argentina that I've gotten some unique experience on. But, like, those are almost, for our North American dealers, kind of unique row units. So that's good, valuable information for us. It helps us for our install docs and stuff like that. But the install doc's really important for me as I start to talk about row units that aren't on my neighbors and family's farms that are local to me and that I see regularly. So that's going to be huge because that's, you know, I don't want to be telling the guy who's turning a wrench on a Kinze 5900 what to do. And I've personally only ever seen that row unit at a farm show.
I'm curious to get you guys' kind of thoughts on this, and I don't know if our dealers, if this is something that they're aware of. Alan, you mentioned that our team, there are some different products that we're starting to get, different people that have a little bit more expertise on. I guess it's probably the really, really choppy way to say that. You know, Matt, I think you have some good planter knowledge, but you have spent a lot of time supporting air seeder products over the last probably year and a half, right? We're getting some more members of the team that are more fully focused on sprayers. But we all desire to be and can be helpful. And I think all of us have access to the same resources, right? I go back to what, Matt, you just identified as, hey, here's the four things that I opened up every day. And everybody on the team has the access to get to those and to navigate those. So we use Zoom, right? That's what we use to take inbound calls. And there is a way in Zoom that we can kind of set up our areas of highest experience and comfort, right? So if a call comes in the liquid queue, that might be something where I feel more comfortable taking that call than, say, a Drew, say a Matt, right? But when everything breaks loose in the spring, any one of us can really take any call. And the reason that we're doing that is to be helpful. There may be somebody that is more comfortable with a certain product line than another, but Drew is just as willing to be helpful and find the answer as I am. And so what that allows us to be able to do then is not have somebody waiting in a queue for 15 or 20 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever it is, before, oh man, you guys must have really been busy. I had to wait a long time. Well, hey, you were in the Delta Force queue and the liquid queue was quite backed up right now. We had some guys sitting and waiting, but they weren't in that queue, right? So when all of us are able to take all phone calls, we're all able to jump in and be helpful.
So that's a good call out, actually, that like our phone system, kind of the way it works, you know, you call in, you get directed to product support. Actually, as a dealer, you've got your own dealer hotline. The IVR then still comes up, and maybe just kind of a a plug for the IVR being an important resource for our dealers to use. Because if I just hit, I don't know what it is, but if I just hit 111 and go to whatever the first queue is, that's not really my issue. So for like, from my expertise, I feel really comfortable on liquid stuff, sprayers, V-Apply, the software involved behind that. I am not as comfortable with Clarity and granular products as Matt is. And so within our phone system, I still have those granular calls assigned to me, but it's at a lower importance than Matt's phone is. And so if Matt and I are both off the phones and your call comes in and you select the Clarity product or the granular product hotline, when it hits our desk, basically Matt's phone rings first and you get Matt as the higher expert in Clarity.
I think this is part of the reason I'm bringing this up is we do take a fair amount of phone calls where it's like, "Hey, Tyler, I was looking for somebody in the finger meter department. Can you help me?" Yes, I can help you. Yep. I'm not going to resend you back through the queue, right? So correct. Go ahead and you don't need to preface your question with that. Go ahead and ask away. And if I do need to ask somebody else, at a minimum, you're getting somebody who's wanting to be helpful and can find you the answer, mm-hmm. right? I think that's why I wanted to say it. So don't beat yourself up if you do misdial, but also know that if you do listen and try to get yourself into the right spot, there's a chance it could benefit you. I think that's maybe why I was trying to make that point. But just get everybody a little glimpse behind the curtain of how it all works.
While we're peeking behind the curtain, can we call out like the new ticketing system and product support resource app? I know that's we've made changes to those very recently.
I think you just did.
And now it's out there. I already said it.
Yep.
Cat's out of the bag.
These are things that have been, you know, if you've been digging through your emails and reading, you know, news updates and stuff from our product support team, that we made a change. Has it been a month yet? I don't think with
28 days, I think I pulled up on the communication.
I think you were talking earlier to me about the product support app. But also the new ticketing system.
Yeah, Zendesk, a few weeks, I would say, for that. Yeah. So
we've already internally have really been liking our new ticket system. I feel like it's a lot more fluid in how people can interact with it. Dealers, customers, dealer employees. It's really nice internally. It makes it a lot easier for multiple product support members to work on the same ticket together. So hopefully that, I don't know if any of our dealers have had any, you know, long or ongoing tickets yet, but I've already seen benefits in, you know, multiple people can be working together. It's just a lot more collaborative than just, Matt, you've got a ticket open, and then you've asked me a question, and maybe I did some digging for some data, and I gave you an answer, and then you regurgitated it. You know, you put it back up into your ticket. It's a lot easier for both of us to interact with that ticket and give dealer A, two inputs.
It feels much less cluttered.
Yeah,
and it's a lot easier to find what you need and to make sure that we're providing, you know, not that we're not providing good service on the prior ticket system, but like it feels less cluttered. I think it's going to be a big improvement going into this next spring.
I do think it's important here that we maybe make a comment around how we look at tickets. I think for me, one thing that I would say is if you have an emergency, that would still be an instance where we want you to call, right? Is that we are going to be more responsive to the phone calls coming in that we're trying to get to in a single digit of minutes, right, of worth of response time. Those are going to take priority over tickets. They candidly are. And so I think the other thing is, while I think this will help streamline and help the flow of information, I would still encourage you to think about tickets as something where if it's not urgent, put a ticket in, right? If it's something that you're curious about, something you've observed, that might be a good instance for a ticket. But I just want to say this so that it's an encouragement that everybody gets the response in the appropriate time they want. If it's planner down or if you need immediate help, that's a phone call, right?
Hydraulic oil shooting across the bar, rain's on the horizon, not the time we want you to try to log into the ticket system.
All right, we'll put it in a ticket and wait. We joke about that, but I just want to make sure that we understand how to use that and how we look at it.
Yeah, and we just yesterday as a whole team were talking about basically making sure that tickets are a priority. You know, just because a guy is asking a simple question and saying, hey, what's the part number that I need to order for a replacement bushing or something like that, we don't say, well, we'll get to you next week once planting is rained out. You know, we got a threshold, and then we're going to try to answer that as fast as possible, get someone hands-on. In fact, actually, again, the comment was made yesterday, the new ticket system being faster for us to kind of just make comments. It's easy for, you know, myself to hop on a ticket and say, I'm looking this up. You know, maybe you've asked for something that is really unique and we don't have a document for it. Hey, looking into this, I'm going to get back to you once I talk to Matt, Tyler, and Drew here. Figure out who has the right information to find that part, or maybe it's a unique issue or a project or something like that.
Yeah.
You talked, Alan, on the new ticket system. You also kind of alluded to the new product support app as well. I know I'm pretty...
Also a big fan of that one.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about that, especially like we kind of talked earlier on after-hours calls. For those of you who don't know, we do have after-hours calls that when we are not in office, a lot of us are at our homes. So kind of with that, I would take what you said, Matt. The resources you gave, and Alan, I'll let you answer this too, are those probably the same types of resources you're using when you're not in office as well, would you say, as far as what you have opened up?
Yeah. Same exact resources.
Yeah, definitely. Especially when I've got my computer readily accessible, I'm doing the exact same thing at my home office as I am here. But the product support app, like part of the brainchild there, this is a long project for us, actually. It's taken multiple different iterations. It's actually resulted in some really awesome changes on the back end of our content resource management system. It's made additional improvements, actually, that has kind of spawned helpful things for us internationally, making it easier for translations and stuff like that.
I'm going to jump in here and share, if anybody is interested in the app and doesn't know about it, the way you're going to have to find it is by going onto the cloud and under support, the Precision Planting News site. There is an article from February 14th that talks about product resources and ticketing changes, which actually kind of highlights most of what we've just talked about. But there's a QR code in there that you can scan that will give you the ability to get that app.
So I do actually have a question on that, Alan, Tyler, and Matt. I mean, anybody feel free to kind of jump in on this. But you talked about, how about like resources in general, maybe for a newer dealer or someone who is still trying to navigate through these, how do we maybe make these less intimidating? How do we know where to maybe navigate, where to start when we get a phone call or we get an issue that's brought to us?
Yeah, I mean, so, well, for one, like each of our documents has an index at the beginning, right? So if you're looking for pinouts, if you're looking for diagnostic trees in the dealer service manual, you can easily find where that starts. So you can eliminate, you know, 2/3 of the document if you don't need it and go to where that begins. But also just kind of, and this kind of is something that I definitely had to learn from the beginning. When you get an issue presented, you can kind of break most of these systems down into smaller chunks, right? So let's say you've got a 16-row planter and the first backbone, the first 5-6 SRMs are having some sort of issue, right? Maybe they're falling out of communication. So from there, you might start like thinking, okay, there's a issue with the planter. But really, you could start saying, okay, there is a commonality there. Those SRMs are all on one backbone, right? So in my mind, I want to break this system down to the smallest chunk possible. Fix that first. That might not be the fix-all for everything that's happening, but at least that's a good place to start. So from a, you know, from a hands-on perspective, that's how I look at it. And then from there, you can decide, okay, I have 4, you know, products plugged into a can expansion hub. Let's remove all of these and focus on the SRM first. So then you're going to go find SRM-based documentation, right? And you're going to use maybe dealer service manual, maybe the diagnostic trees, and you're going to start diagnosing SRMs. Start plugging in one product after the other. Maybe the SRMs are actually okay, but you get around to plugging in, you know, a certain product, and then you start to realize, okay, like, there's something going on there. Start checking the harnessing. Okay, there might be a short. There might be something going on. Somebody mentioned rats chewing through stuff earlier. I mean, you never know.
Every good day.
So from a physical standpoint and like a documentation standpoint, breaking things down into smaller chunks is usually helpful for me.
Absolutely. Tyler, Alan, you guys have any adds to that? As I'm not calling you guys old here by any means, so don't take that the wrong way, but as more experienced product support members.
Yeah, I don't know. Quite frankly, it's not – it's a double-edged sword, right? Everyone has a unique planter, but they all have a commonality. You know, CAN communication is CAN communication. Smart connector is a smart connector. You know, the way those individual systems work are always going to be the same. So whether you've, you know, whether we're working on Jason Webster's planter and he's got four liquid products in every row and he's got every control product we have, he's probably beta testing something I don't know about yet. Fundamentally, though, it follows the same rules as the guy that you're working on with a Try It Buy It, who has a Gen 3, a couple SRMs, you know, no PDM, maybe a load cells and a few things like that. The software interacts the same. The communication styles are always going to be the same for those products. And so breaking it down to what is his actual issue, you know, trying to understand what's not happening that he wants to happen, that's going to be the same troubleshooting process for every phone call. And that's the part that I think, you know, Matt's kind of alluding to is making sure that we don't get overwhelmed by this is Jason Webster. This guy's on another level when it comes to energy and drive and doing things that we don't want him to do sometimes, you know, right? He's got that power stance that he's taken to the field with him. So, but his planter is going to do the same things. And again, you know, he could have a dozen different control products, but the one he's calling in about right now is not the other 11. So let's focus on that one product, or if we have to, let's remove the other 11. You know, we're not physically uninstalling them, but let's at least remove them electronically and focus on the one issue that is at hand.
I think for me, the thing that continues throughout as a theme kind of throughout our team is what we use as a tool is the dealer service manual. And sometimes it's tricky because I think the grower states things in a way that doesn't make it feel like, well, this isn't in a troubleshooting manual. But it all comes back to understanding the problem that they're having. And once you understand the problem they're having, row flow won't plant right is not in the troubleshooting trees. But when I push somebody deeper and I understand, what do you mean when you say it won't plant right? Well, there's half the planter that's not, it's not planting anything. I think it then goes back to kind of what Matt is saying is then what's controlling that half of the planter? Is that tied to a motor? Oh, yes, I have two motors on this. Okay, now we're starting to hone in on a problem where motor one won't plant when or won't turn when commanded, right? I think what I'm encouraging everybody around here is if you feel like the troubleshooting trees don't have your exact scenario, ask a couple more questions to understand exactly what the problem is. And I bet it will point you toward an exact troubleshooting instance.
Now, to kind of go back to you, how are we using these tools? You know, what's the pro tip? Matt, you made a comment like probably 20 minutes ago now. You said, Control F.
Oh, yeah.
I pull up a document, Control F. That's a huge computer.
ChatGPT. No, I'm just kidding. Not ChatGPT.
We fed all of the apps guides into ChatGPT.
Yes. No.
No, the Control F, that's like a simple little like pro tip nugget of you can do that in any PDF. You can do that on your phone. You can do that on a computer. You don't do Control F, but
for anyone that doesn't understand what he's talking about, on a laptop or like a keyboard, you hit the Control button and then click F, and it'll pull up a search bar which you can literally just type keywords into. And as you enter keywords, it'll highlight all of the pages that contain that keyword. And there's arrows you can navigate. To if there's 20 instances of row flow in a document, you can click the up and down arrow to navigate up and down the document to those keywords.
Yeah. And so that's the Control F is just a shortcut. The document itself still has a find option on your phone. If you pull up a PDF and you hit the three little menu dots at the top of a document, almost everything, whether it's a PDF, a Word doc, an Excel file, is going to have some version of the phrase find or find and replace. And that is huge. Actually, I use it a lot on my phone, especially when I'm a smaller screen. I have a huge document, but I know for a fact that this phrase exists in the troubleshooting guide. I'm going to go ahead and toss that in there, and it's going to take me right to it. So
something else that I've kind of picked up on too along the way on phones especially, if you learn to ask the right questions, that'll get you 25% towards the solution. You might still have a lot of work ahead of you, depending on what situation you're dealing with. But if you fail to ask the right questions, you're going to prolong the pain for everyone. Like, you need to make sure that you're thinking it through, and that you are not assuming more than you should be. Asking the right questions is definitely fundamental when it comes to diagnostics. And to, again, back to Drew's question, to know what documents to narrow down. What do I not need? Well, I'm going to figure out what I do need by asking the right questions. And the right questions, yes, some of it is you just kind of learn over time what the right questions are, but also just being thorough in the questions that you ask can really be beneficial.
Tyler, was there by chance an old podcast episode on this that would allude to what Matt's talking about?
Yeah, no, I think, I don't remember if it was last year or 2 years ago, but we've done an episode in the past about asking better questions in the springtime. That actually, now that I think about it, maybe up to 3 years old. But nevertheless, if you go back and search March of past years, I that's still relevant. I still feel like there's a lot of really useful things in there. I think that was something that, you know, Matt, last year when you had started out, that was something that got recommended as a resource. Yeah, I would still highly recommend that.
Oh, you mean the podcast?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep, 100%.
Alan, I want to talk a little bit about after hours, because you mentioned earlier when I'm at home. I don't, just to kind of continue to show dealers a little bit behind the curtain, we are not required to be here after hours. Now, I'll back up and say, what is after hours? For us, 8 to 5 Central, we are all here as a team in office, right?
Yeah.
Outside of those hours is, quote, after hours. And there are a team of people each day of the week that are required to fill those hours, right? We take inbound phone calls. But there is not a requirement to be here in this building. The nice thing about that is, and I'm sure this probably comes across as obvious, that what that means is there's nights where, you know, I'm on call, but if I can fit in 30 minutes at home to have dinner with the family, man, what that does for me from a mental standpoint is huge.
Yeah.
Right? Now, there are some of us that are a little closer to this facility, and so it's easier for us just to stay here, stay put, and not have some glamorous at-home setup, because we're 5 minutes away and it doesn't make sense to haul all our monitors or haul things home. But there are some of us that live a half hour away that, you know, going home and being with family and having a little nicer in-home setup is valuable. I think the reason to talk about that is, A, I didn't know if people know that. There is after-hour support available. And B, I think I've been asked enough times, hey, I was talking to so-and-so, can you transfer me? After hours makes that kind of difficult,
yeah.
Right? Because I'm not right across from Matt at after hours. Now, I'm still here, and I'm willing to be helpful. But I think it's good to know that maybe coming into that kind of after hours.
Yeah, our phone system is super flexible. We're still using the same phone system. But it's the transferring aspect, when it comes to my cell phone, becomes a little more difficult. I can't just say, you know, I can't lean over my desk and say, hey, Matt, can I send this guy over to you? You were just talking to him. We still have ways to do that. You know, if Matt is working on something and makes so much more sense for me to get Matt back on the line with you instead of me trying to start back over at 9 PM on Saturday, I'm absolutely saying, hey, let me take your phone number, take your ticket number. That'd be really helpful. And then, obviously Matt's probably on phone calls with me right now. Otherwise he's not being, you know, requested at this hour. I'm gonna get back to you. And I'm going to call Matt up and say, hey, here's the guy I was talking to, or I'm going to text him or something like that. And Matt's probably going to have to reach out directly in that case. But that's just one of the many things. Now, the other thing is, spring is here for us, right? You know, there's not planters actively planting here in Tremont, but there's guys planting down south that have been for weeks. You know, our spring season from a support standpoint has started. But the volume's not quite there that I need to be here late.
That's a good point.
Last night. So I took a couple phone calls last night on the way home from work, helped guys keep things rolling. I called, you know, Jason Portner, who's an RM of ours up north, northwest a little bit. And, you know, he's at the end of a long day and trying to get things wrapped up and get both himself, the dealer, and I imagine the customer was probably there as well, all off the farm. You know, they all have families too. So he had reached out about support, and I called him up and I said, hey, you know, I'm on call. What can we work through? And Jason and I got a pretty good relationship. We've been around together for a long time. And so I started out the conversation with, I just picked up my son from daycare. I apologize for the noise in the back seat. Let's keep rolling. So there's that aspect of it. You know, yeah. you don't get the kid crying for snacks or for mommy between 8 and 5. He's not here at the office.
I'm sure all of our dealers understand too that, like, in busy season in April, you don't hire to staff that time, right? You don't hire people to say, well, I got to keep 10 guys busy all year round because I need 10 for 2 months in the spring. Mm-hmm. But then the other 10 months out of the year, I really only need 2 to 3 guys, right? It's the same thing here, right? So I was on call on a weekend in early March. There are guys planting. We want to be available to help. But I frankly think all weekend we took a single-digit number of calls,
yeah,
right? I won't give exact numbers because I don't remember them, but it was a very low number of calls. That probably doesn't require us to sit in an office mm-hmm. all day. And frankly, I'm glad it didn't, because I was able to go outside and enjoy some nice weather with my boys and still answer a phone call when it came in.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you, Matt, for your great insight behind resources that we're using in product support here. Thank you to you listeners out there for taking a listen to this latest episode.
Drew, I want to jump in real quick. This is going to be the last podcast episode that we have that's our every 2 week style. The next one we do will be the first week in April, and it's going to be our in-season episodes, which are going to hopefully be short to the point. We try to keep them in the 10 to 15 minute range, but that's where we pass on trends that we're seeing, quick troubleshooting tips, things of that nature. So we'll do those. We knock those out on a weekly basis. Those should be every Thursday, but I just want to give everybody a heads up. This will be the last of our out-of-season style episodes. We're gonna switch to early April ones being the in-season quick updates. So that's what's coming up next.
Yeah, thank you for that, Tyler. Again, thank you all for listening, and we will see you next time.